So when we come out on a day that's a snowy day outside and it's cold for us to come and it's difficult for us to make it to shul, I'm reminded of the Gemara Maseches Yuma, where the Gemara has on Daf Lamed Hey the story about Hillel HaZaken. Hillel HaZaken is the great Hillel, the father, the Rebbe of all the base Hillel. So the Gemara says that Hillel had a very small parnasa that he made. He had a very small living and he did not get paid a lot, and yet he gave half of the money that he made every day to the Shomer HaPesach, to he who watched the door by the Beis HaMedrash, by the shul, by the yeshiva, because he wanted to come and learn. One fine day, Hillel didn't have a parnasa, he didn't have any money, and they ask him at the door, would you like to pay us to get in? He says, I'm sorry, I don't have any money. They say, I'm sorry, you cannot come in. So that doesn't stop Hillel. If a person wants to learn enough, he goes up to the roof, and he decides he's going to put his ear by the sun, by the skylight, and he's going to listen into everything going on. That night, the Gemara tells us, it was snowing so heavily, and Hillel was laying on top of the roof, and it says there were three amos of snow or something of that nature, a lot of snow that piled up on top of him. And you see how much Hillel was willing to go to such a far distance in order to learn the Torah that he so much wanted to learn. So that's the same over here. We go out in the foot of snow, we make sure that we do our best to be involved in Talmud Torah, and we never allow days like this to stop us from learning the Torah that we want to learn. So let's discuss a number of halachas that pertain to the snow in particular. Number one, the shaila is, what about using snow for netilas yadayim? Using snow for netilas yadayim, is a person able to use that in the place of water, or do you assume no? Netilas yadayim has to be done with water and with water only. So the Shulchan Aruch has the following case. Shulchan Aruch is in the very beginning of Aruch Chaim, Siman Dalid, where he says, "Imshichshech yada besoch kli shamayim." Let's say a person, instead of pouring water onto their hands like we're all used to doing, let's say the person goes ahead and has a big vat of water. And they just put their hands, they dip them into the water, and they circle the hand around to make sure it's clean. Would that suffice for netilas yadayim or not? So the Shulchan Aruch says, that would be good enough for netila lekriya shema ulatvila. That would be good enough for the washing of the hands that's necessary before one davens. The Gemara says that one should go out of their way to try to wash their hands before davening. So that kind of washing before davening, says the Shulchan Aruch, it's good enough if you just dip your hands in a vat of water. You don't actually have to pour the water on top of your hands. However, he says, when we wash our hands in the morning, and part of the reason why we wash our hands in the morning is because of Ruach Ra, it's because there's some sort of spirit that's on our hands. There, says the Shulchan Aruch, it's not good enough to dip your hands into the water. Why? Because once you dip them in once, now the water is, so to speak, contaminated. So now it's not going to help. You can't dip them in once and then dip in again. You have to dip it once. Once you dip it once, it's not going to work anymore. So therefore, he says, in terms of netilas yadayim in the morning, that's not going to suffice. However, he says he's not sure what's the halacha if I have three big vats of water, and I go dip my hands in once into one vat, then I go to the second one, dip them in the second time, and then I go to a separate one and dip them in the third time. Perhaps that works. He's not sure. So the Taz there discusses the issue, and he says, like we suggested, that the reason why dipping your hands in the morning a few times into the same vat of water will not work is because once you've done it once, now the Ruach Ra is in the water. Now the water is, so to speak, contaminated. So now that cannot be used. However, says the Taz, perhaps if you go to three different kalim, three different vessels, three different vats, that would be good enough. That perhaps would be good enough. However, he now throws in another piece to this equation, and he says that the Zohar HaKadosh is of the opinion that no, there's a separate issue. And that issue is that when we wash our hands in the morning for netilas yadayim, we have to do it dafka al yidei irui. It has to be by pouring. It cannot be via dipping. That's what the Zohar HaKadosh writes. And therefore, says the Taz, because we have this Zohar, therefore, he's not exactly sure. Even if a person does go to three separate vats of water, perhaps that won't work, because after all, you're dipping instead of washing from a cup. So that's the question that is raised over there with regard to dipping your hands in water as opposed to washing your hands with water with a cup. So now the question is, the Mishnah Berurah raises the issue, what about when I have snow outside? Am I able to go ahead and stick my hand in the snow? Again, I'm not going to stick it in the same place that I stuck it the first time. I'll go to three different places in my backyard, stick my hand into the snow. Will that suffice? Will that be good enough for the netilas yadayim in the morning? So says the Mishnah Berurah, after all, we have the Zohar HaKadosh who says that when you wash your hands for netilas yadayim in the morning, it's not good enough just to dip them in. You have to actually wash them. Ba'inan irui. We need that you should pour onto your hands. So therefore, he says, lechatchila, we should try our best not to use the snow, because that's the same as dipping our hands in the water. However, he says, b'di'evit, if you're in a situation where there is no water, then perhaps it would be good enough, b'shas hadchak, when a person is in a state of some kind of emergency, a person can use the snow as a means of netilas yadayim. Let's say one happens to find themselves in a situation like that. You're hiking somewhere up in the mountain and you want to eat a sandwich and you don't have any water, so you want to stick your hands into the snow in order to go ahead and have the Netilas Yadayim done. So the Rishonim have a disagreement what bracha should be recited. After all, you're not washing your hands. You can't say, Al Netilas Yadayim, I'm not pouring water on my hands. Maybe I should say a bracha, Al Tvilas Yadayim, I'm dipping my hands. So that's a major discussion, a machlokas between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. If a person finds themselves in a situation like that, where you don't have water available to pour, but all you have is water that you can place your hands in, or in our case, if all you have is snow that you can put your hands in, and you're not going to pour the snow on your hands, should you assume that a bracha of Al Netilas Yadayim should be said? Or should you say no, the bracha perhaps should be switched to Al Tvilas Yadayim because one is not actually pouring on their hands, but rather one is dipping their hands into the snow or into the water that's in the vat. So that's question number one that we discussed. What's the story with snow with regard to Netilas Yadayim? We move on to Hilchos Shabbos, and Hilchos Shabbos is extremely relevant. Every so often we have a snowstorm on Shabbos, and people ask all kinds of questions about what is the status of snow on Shabbos and whether they're allowed to shovel the snow or put salt out on the snow and whether or not they're allowed to make snowmen and snowballs. So let's talk about all of that. We begin with the Mishnah Mesechah Shabbos, Daf Nun Aleph Hamed Beis, where the Mishnah says, Ein Meraskin, a person is not allowed to squeeze, Lo Es HaSheleg, you're not allowed to take snow and squeeze it out, Velo Es HaBarad, and you're not allowed to take hail and squeeze it until it turns into water. When you want to do it just so that you should get the water, that you can drink it or something like that, you're not allowed to squeeze it in order that the water comes out. Aval, says the Mishnah, no sin hu l'toch hakos, you're allowed to take the snow or the hail and put it into a cup, o l'toch haka'ara, or into a big dish, into a big bowl, ve'eino choshesh, and you don't have to worry about that. Even though you know it's going to turn into water by being in the cup or in the vessel, as opposed to if you would have left it out in the street. So here, says the Gemara, there's no problem at all. You're allowed to do that. So it seems to be a clear indication that the Gemara's only concern is that you're not allowed to squeeze it to make it into water on your own with your hands. However, if you just take it from the street and you put it into a cup or you put it into a bowl and you know that it's going to become into water by virtue of the fact that it's no longer outside in the cold anymore, that would seem to be permissible. And what you see, clearly an indication from that Gemara, according to many, is that the Gemara sees no problem with muktzah. The Gemara does not assume that snow is muktzah, and that's why you would be allowed to take it and put it into a cup and put it into a bowl until it melts. The Gemara's only issue here is to squeeze it out and make it into the liquid form instead of the snow that it's in right now. So this is the opinion of the Mishnah Berurah, this is the opinion of the Eshel Avram, this is the opinion of Rab Moshe Feinstein, and most of the Gedolei Acharonim, that snow is not considered to be muktzah at all. And many bring the proof from this Gemara that we mentioned. This is something that's the predominant opinion of the Acharonim, that snow is not considered to be muktzah. And in fact, even if it rains on Shabbos, the Gemara has a discussion. Let's say it rains on Shabbos. Is a person allowed to put a cup outside, catch the rain and drink it? Or do you assume, no, maybe the rain is considered to be muktzah because it wasn't here before Shabbos began? So the general opinion of most of the Acharonim is that both rain and snow, even if they fall on Shabbos itself, they are not considered to be muktzah at all, and you are allowed to go ahead and handle that on Shabbos. So once we assume that snow is not considered to be muktzah, would one be allowed to make a snowball on Shabbos? What would you say about that? So this is also a major point of discussion. The Shmirah Shabbos Kol Chasa, which is the Sefer on Hilchos Shabbos, written by Reb Neuvert, he discussed most of the halachas there with Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. So he writes that he feels, in his opinion, that it's not proper to make snowballs on Shabbos. Even though snow itself is not muktzah, even though you're allowed to handle it, even though we say in the Gemara you're allowed to put it into a cup, but to make it into a snowball, perhaps he says is not permissible. Why? Because the Rambam says as follows. When the Rambam tries to define what is the malacha of bona, of building something on Shabbos, what does it mean? Says the Rambam, kala makabetz chelak al chelak. If a person takes one piece and puts it together with something else, vidavik hakola, now everything is stuck together, at sheyasu guf echad, until you have two separate entities that now became one, says the Rambam, that is dome le'isr binyan. That is very similar to the malacha of bona on Shabbos, and the Rambam writes, that would not be permissible. So therefore, says the Shmir Shabbos Kol Chasa, this is exactly what the Rambam is describing. You take two different entities, you take one piece of snow from here and another piece of snow from there, take all the different particles, you crush them together, and now you have one thing. Doesn't that seem to be a violation of the malacha of bona? So this is the opinion of the Shmir Shabbos Kol Chasa, that one is not allowed to make snowballs. But many, many disagreed with him. Why did they disagree? Because they felt then after all, when a person makes a snowball, that is not of permanent nature. It's going to fall apart very soon, or you're going to throw it and it's going to fall apart on its own. You had no intent for that to last for a long time. And the Chasam Sofer already writes, and many other Acharonim assume like him, that if you have a binyan that's only the shah, when you have only a temporary structure that you're making, that would not be a violation of the malacha of boneh b'shabbos. That's not called boneh, that's not called building. Because after all, you only made something for a temporary structure, for a temporary period. You had no interest in that being of any permanence at all, and therefore we assume that that would not be a violation of boneh on Shabbos. Let's say, take for example, a very relevant shaila about Lego on Shabbos. Are children allowed to play with Lego, or do you say maybe that's considered to be boneh? After all, you're taking a bunch of different pieces, a bunch of different entities, and you're making them all into one, and you're making something very nice. Should we assume that's a violation of boneh? This is a major discussion in the contemporary Svarim. And they write that perhaps it's not a violation of boneh, because once again, the children make it, and then they take it apart, you build it again, you take it apart. So this is something that has no permanence at all. It's something that from the outset was only made to be a very transient building in its very nature, and therefore we assume that something of that nature would be probably permissible for children to do on Shabbos. And therefore many disagree here as well, and many feel that you're allowed to make snowballs on Shabbos because there's no issue with that. However, says the Shmir Shabbos Kolchasa, even if you assume that snowballs are allowed to be made on Shabbos, snowmen and snow castles are not allowed to be made. Why? Because there, you want them to last for a long time. You want that everyone should see how beautiful you made it and how you rounded off all the edges and how perfectly it came out. Your intent when you made the snowman or the snow castle was that it should last. It shouldn't just be a temporary structure. It should be something that should last until it gets wiped away by the weather. But generally, we assume that something of that nature is made to last, and therefore many assume that even if you say that snowballs are permissible to be made on Shabbos because they're of very temporary nature, when it comes to a snowman or a snow castle, that's something that perhaps we should hold ourselves back from doing. There is a further discussion. Let's say it snowed before Shabbos and you got everything ready and you made the snowballs. Am I allowed to go ahead and use those snowballs that were made before Shabbos and throw them and destroy them on Shabbos? Or should you say no? Maybe we have a prohibition on Shabbos called soser, which means you're not allowed to destroy something that was already made. So maybe if you assume, like the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, that making a snowball is considered boneh, that's considered building, then maybe destroying a snowball is considered soser, it's considered destroying. So that's the question that's discussed. Again, opinions in both directions, but it's something interesting to be aware of. There is a malach on Shabbos that we refer to as schita, which means you're not allowed to squeeze something out and derive a liquid from a solid. So the question over here is, the Shulchan Aruch discusses, is a person allowed, let's say, not so relevant nowadays because we have restrooms in our own homes, we don't have to go out to the fields, but let's say it was freezing cold in Europe, and the bathroom was a far walk outside, so instead the person sometimes, if all they had to do was urinate, so sometimes they would go right outside the house. Why walk a mile in order to get there? May as well save yourself the time and the freezing cold and just go outside. So the Shulchan Aruch discusses that there's a machlokas harishonim about doing that on Shabbos if it's snowing outside. Because by urinating on the snow, it's obviously going to melt the snow. Is that considered a violation of schita? Is that considered to be like you're squeezing the snow out, you're extracting, and now you're making it into a liquid? That's the question that's discussed in Shulchan Aruch. And the Mishnah Berurah writes that generally we assume that's not considered to be a malacha of schita at all. That's not a problem. We generally assume, like the first opinion in Shulchan Aruch, that that would be permissible. Not so relevant for us, but where it is relevant is to put out salt on Shabbos. The same way to urinate on the snow will make it melt, so too to put out salt on Shabbos will make it melt as well. So the question is, obviously, where you have an Erev and you're allowed to carry outside, would we assume that one is allowed to put out salt on Shabbos, or do you say, no, that's considered like schita. You're squeezing out the substance that you have and you're making it into a liquid. That's the classical case of schita that's not permissible on Shabbos. So that's the question that some Achronim discuss. And what's clear in Shulchan Aruch is that any time you have a chashash hezek derabim, anytime you have a concern that maybe somebody is going to get damaged, somebody's going to slip, or someone's going to hurt themselves by virtue of the fact that you're not putting salt out, or by virtue of the fact that you're not shoveling, you are absolutely allowed to do that on Shabbos. The Shmir Shabbos Kolchasa says you should do that. We would tell people to absolutely do that, number one, because that's not really schita. Schita is generally when you take something and you crush it in order to get the liquid to extract from it. Let's say I take an orange and I squeeze it out that the orange juice should be extracted, or I take a bunch of grapes and I squeeze it that the grapes should come out. That's the real classical case of schita. So this is already further removed from that kind of act, because I'm not taking anything with my hands and squeezing it. That's number one. Number two, what? So you're allowed to shovel snow on Shabbos if it's in a place where, again, we assume snow is not muktzah, and if it's in a place where we are afraid that someone's going to slip. So you certainly are allowed to shovel snow to make a path in front of your house that somebody shouldn't slip. However, to go and do your whole driveway just because you have off today, that's what we would call uvdin d'chol. That's something that's not really advisable because that's not what you're supposed to be doing on Shabbos. Again, the Shulchan Aruch writes clearly, anytime we have an Isur d'Rabbanan, anytime we have a rabbinic decree on Shabbos, it would not apply when we're talking about a situation where there's danger to anyone. That wouldn't apply. And therefore, he writes over here that the Chachamim would not have said that there's anything wrong with taking care of the snow if it's in a situation where somebody might hurt themselves. There is a violation of prohibition on Shabbos called Bishul, that you're not allowed to cook. So that means you're not allowed to put something on a fire and actually cook it. One of the issues that is raised by Bishul is not only are you not allowed to put something on a fire, but you're also not allowed to do something that is called hatmana. You're not allowed to warm something, but let's say I have a pot of chicken soup and now I put it into an insulation to make it last, to make it retain the heat. I have to insulate it all around. That's the prohibition of hatmana, and that's something that we're not allowed to do on Shabbos because that's considered like Bishul. That's similar to Bishul because we're afraid the same way you're retaining the heat, maybe you're going to go the next step and actually heat it up on the fire. So that's the halacha that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. So the question that's raised over here is, let's say it's snowing outside, and I don't have any room in my refrigerator. Can I take all my bottles of soda that I want to use for Shabbos and put them into the snow? Am I allowed to dunk them into the snow and leave them there, and when I come for the meal, I'm going to take it out? Now everything will be refrigerated. So if you look in the Gemara Maseches Shabbos, it says, Ein tomnim b'Shabbos, you're not allowed to bury something on Shabbos, you're not allowed to insulate it on Shabbos. Afilu b'davar she'eino mosif hevel. Even when we're talking about something that doesn't add heat, it just retains the heat, that's also not permissible. So there were those who wanted to argue, maybe you should say, the Gemara says you're not allowed to put something in insulation, even if it doesn't add heat, so therefore you're not allowed to do this either. But that's an absolutely wrong assumption. There's nothing about that that's correct. This is absolutely permissible, to take your bottles of soda and put them into the snow. There would be nothing wrong with that at all. There's no halachic objection, because after all, the whole issue over here is just that we're concerned maybe you're going to go the extra mile, and even though it only retains the heat, maybe you're going to take it and put it on the fire. But here, where you're trying to make it cold, there's nothing to be concerned about at all, and therefore, that would be permissible halacha. One final Shabbos issue is, what about a person who wears boots? So generally, when you wear boots on Shabbos, and every time you take a step into the snow, you're going to be making ksiva, you're going to be making, what do you call that? Indentations, thank you. So generally, we assume that there's a malach on Shabbos not only of writing, but if you're going to be mitzayer etzura, if you're going to make some sort of very elegant picture or some sort of something, that indentation into the ground, that's considered to be an issue of kosev as well. So maybe I should say, every step that I take on the ground is considered to be kosev. Maybe you should say I have to stay home on Shabbos. So generally we assume that's not an issue at all. Number one, because when you're doing something like that in the snow, that is only a temporary ksiva. It's not going to last for a long time. The next person's going to walk over it, it's going to be all over. So number one, when you have something that's not a permanent ksiva, that's not really the isur d'oraisa of kosev. When we generally assume that you have malachas on Shabbos, that means something that's going to be of everlasting or of more permanent nature. But over here, where you're going to walk in the snow, that's only a very temporary nature. Number one, that's the reason why we can be mekel. Number two, ksiva is generally done with our hands. We don't do ksiva with our feet. So this is what we would call kosev kela acharya. This is like writing in a backhanded fashion or back-footed fashion. And therefore we assume that's not really considered to be kosev at all. That's not really the malacha. Number three, this is what we call a psikresha delo nichalei. I have no interest in the indentations and the marks that are being made on the floor. I'm not trying to make anything special, anything fancy, and therefore we generally assume that this would not be an issue at all. Again, I remember I had a question last year. There was somebody, unfortunately, who was in the hospital, and they were in a very critical state. They were intubated. Were they intubated? No, it was some pipe was in their throat where they weren't able to speak, but they were fully alert. And they were getting very frustrated that they weren't able to communicate with all those who were around them for Shabbos. So the question was, what can we allow them to do in order to communicate? Generally, we allow certain kulas, certain hatayrim on Shabbos for one who's a chola. This person was certainly a chola sheyesh bo sakana. They were in the ICU. It was a very serious situation. And it was frustrating them very much that they weren't able to communicate with the doctors and the nurses and with all those around them. Because during the week, they had a computer. But on Shabbos, the shayla was, what were they supposed to do? So I asked Rav Asher Weiss, and he said, he thinks that since we assume that temporary ksiva is only considered to be a iser d'rabbanan on Shabbos, Since the only real malach of kosev is when you write something that's going to be of everlasting or of more permanent nature, but when you do a temporary ksiva, when you do something that's only going to last for a little bit of time, that's not considered to be an issue of malach on Shabbos at all. So he first suggested that we should try to get this woman one of those children's toys where you can write and then you pull the, whatever that's made of, the magnets, I don't know what it is, but you write basically and then you pull the string and everything goes back. What?
Magnadoodle.
Magnadoodle? So we tried it. We brought it up to the room before Shabbos and the woman said, I can't do this. You can write, you know, two words at a time, then you have to erase it and start all over again. So I called Rav Asher Weiss again. I asked him, what do you think? The woman is uncomfortable with that. So he had a tremendous chiddush. He said, well, temporary ksiva, the question is, what do you mean temporary? Does temporary ksiva mean that it's not going to last for a long time? Or does temporary ksiva mean that I could erase it at any time? So he thought that it means the second way. Temporary ksiva means that I could erase it at any time. So he said, go get her a board with a marker and one of those erasers. And he thought that that was also considered a temporary ksiva. That was a tremendous chiddush. My father did not agree at all. But that was a very interesting chiddush. That temporary ksiva means not only that it's not going to last, but temporary might even mean that you have the ability to erase it immediately. So we got this woman. I said, look, you can rely on Rav Asher Weiss. It's okay. So we got this woman the marker board. And she was writing on Shabbos and erasing it. And Rav Asher Weiss felt that that was considered a temporary ksiva. Again, that's relevant to our case here with the boots that make all the kinds of indentations on the ground. Again, since it's only a temporary ksiva, we assume that might not be an issue. Yeah?
Two naughty questions. You don't have to answer them. I want to throw a snowball on Shabbos.
We spoke about that. That's the question.
Throwing at somebody.
That's the question. Maybe if you throw the snowball, is that considered to be soser? That's a discussion.
And if you know you're a poor thrower, you know you're going to miss anyway, are you allowed? Anyway,
so that's a question. Anyway, it's almost time for mincha. Let's close with one more shaila, and that is, somebody called today, a woman in the shul wanted to know, am I allowed to be tovel my utensils? I have things in the house. I don't have the patience to go out to the mikveh and actually bring them all there and schlep them and wash them and dry them and everything. It's much easier. I'll go into my backyard. I'll put everything into the backyard as it is. And I'll just dip it into the snow. I'll make sure it's fully immersed. Do we assume that that would be considered a supplement for the mikveh? Or do you assume perhaps mikveh has to be made of water and snow does not suffice for water? So this is a very important question. Oh, so the first question that we have to talk about is, are we talking about a situation where you have 40 sa worth of snow? A mikveh, in order to be kosher, has to be a certain amount of volume. So over here, you're going to have a very large area because snow, obviously, when you condense it and you take out all the air, it's going to take up a lot less room than the water. So therefore, first thing you have to know is, only if you have a very big backyard can we even begin the discussion, because you have to have a place where you have at least 40 so altogether, one right next to the other. What? If you have a pool. Pool is filled with snow, that's certainly 40 so. Should we assume that that would be good enough for a mikveh or not? So this is a major question. The Mishnah writes in Maseches Mikvos that this is a machlokes hatanoim. The first Tana is of the opinion that Sheleg, that snow is good enough to complete a mikveh, which means if I have 35 saw, if I have almost the whole volume filled with water, and now I just need to finish it up, so you can put some snow that connects to the mikveh, and that will be good enough to finish it up. Well, that's a very curious opinion. What do you mean you can finish it up? If you're able to finish it up, you should also be able to have a whole mikveh full of snow. What's the difference between finishing it up and having a complete mikveh? But that's the first opinion in the Mishnah. Second opinion is that snow is considered like a solid, and the same way you're not allowed to dip your pot into the ground in order to put it in the mikveh, that's not called a mikveh, it has to be made out of water, so too you can't put it into snow, because snow is considered solid, and the Gemara goes so far as to say, even after it melts, since it started off as snow, it didn't start off as a mikveh, even after it melts, it might be considered like a solid, and you cannot use that as a supplement for the mikveh. That's the second opinion. And the third opinion is that no, snow is considered like water. There's no distinction between snow and water. After all, we know that snow is the same as water. And therefore, the third opinion in the Mishnah is that snow would be just as good as water, no problem at all. You'd be able to use that in the place of water. How do we paskin la'alacha? This is a major question in the Rishonim. So the Rambam and the Rush have a major disagreement, and they're not sure exactly how to paskin on this. And this is all quoted in the Beis Yosef, and he says, since it's a major machlokes harishonim, therefore the Beis Yosef suggests that one is only allowed to use the snow when we're talking about a tefillah that's required midirabbana. So sometimes, let's say glass. Glass is a big shaila. Glass only requires a tefillah midirabbana, or there are other items that only require a tefillah midirabbana. In a case like that, we would say, says the Shulchan Aruch, we would allow you to use the snow because, after all, it's a big machlokes harishonim, He says, I don't want to take upon my shoulders to allow you to do something, even to take care of your mitzvah daraisa. So therefore he limits it and he says, when we're talking about a vessel that only needs tefillah midrabbanan, we would allow you to use the snow in place of a mikvah filled with water. That's what the Shulchan Aruch writes. The Ramah disagrees, and the Ramah says, no, doesn't matter if it's daraisa, doesn't matter if it's derabbanan, a person should not use the mikvah made of snow. Unless we're talking about bidiyevet or a shasat chak. Let's say I live in a community where there is no water. For whatever reason, the water is out, the mikvah is empty, and now I'm going to have to wait months and months in order to get myself a mikvah that's going to be kosher. So in a case like that, the Ramah says, that's a real shasat chak, that's a diyevet, and in a case like that, the Ramah says, we have a right to assume like the other Rishonim, and you can use that body of snow, I guess we call it, instead of the body of water, you can use the body of snow, and you can dip everything into that. Now again, this is all provided that you have a big enough space that has enough snow in it that would be able to fill the volume of a real mikvah. That goes without saying, that's obvious. So in practical terms, we generally assume that when you have a situation like somebody who wants to use the snow as a mikvah, so we generally assume that we accept the opinion of both of the machmirim. We accept the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, but we're machmir for both. That we say you're only allowed to use that snow for a mikvah if we're talking about a kli that only needs tvila midrabanan, plus if it's something that's a shasat chak and a bidiyevet. But over here where we have very easily accessible mikvos to put our kelim in, we would generally suggest that it's not the proper thing to do. It's not really right to use that as a mikvah in order to take care of our mitzvah of tevilas kelim. Let's close with one very interesting story that I saw. This is a story that's quoted in one of the biographies of the Brisker Rav. So he writes, Hinei bizman sheyared hasheleg bi'ir hakodesh Yerushalayim. There was one year when there was a lot of snow in Yerushalayim. And he says, Halachti berachov, the Brisker Rav was walking on the street. V'halchu kulam la'at la'at. Everybody was careful not to slip. Everybody was walking very slowly. They were afraid, maybe I'm going to slip, I'm going to have a misstep, and then I'm going to hurt myself. So Amar li echad, someone turned to the Brisker Rav and said, Shezeh davar nifla. He had a very interesting observation. Shebe gashmius, when it comes to our own bodies, when we're afraid for ourselves, I'm afraid I'm going to slip. Ha'anoshim efachdim. Everybody's very concerned, I'm nervous, maybe I'm going to slip, I walk very slowly. Masha'en kem beruchnius. He made a comment to the Brisker Rav, when it comes to our spirituality, Hochem kulam lebetach. Everybody walks around with confidence. You don't walk around slowly. You're not nervous about anything. You say, what's going to happen already? Who's going to get in my way? How am I going to slip? How am I going to fall? How am I going to get involved in something that I shouldn't? Nobody's concerned about that. Lelo shum pachad mehachlaka. Nobody's ever nervous about slipping spiritually. This is the comment that was made to the Brisker Rav. Listen what the Brisker Rav commented back to him. I think both comments are very insightful. Said the Brisker Rav back, Vehosafti lo. Shemelvad mashu omer. Aside from the comment, aside from the observation that you're making, yesh lomar od havdil. He says, I observe something else that is also something to make note of, and that is the following: shebegashmi is that when it comes to our own personal lives, kol echad choshesh mefached al atzmo. I'm very nervous for myself. I don't want to lose money. I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to do anything that's going to compromise my stature in my life. Shemahu atzmo yachlik. Maybe I'll slip. Maybe I'll lose out. Aval Baruchnius, however, he says, when it comes to spirituality, kal echad mistakel al hasheni. Everyone's busy looking at somebody else that they shouldn't fall. When I'm walking in the snow, I don't pay attention to anybody else. I walk slowly because if I start looking at someone else, I'm going to lose track of where I'm supposed to be going. I'm going to lose track of the fact that I might slip. My own feet might take a misstep. However, he says, when it comes to Ruchnius, hasheni lo yachlik. We're all so busy looking that someone else shouldn't slip. We're not even looking at ourselves, he says, aval kal echad al atzma inu mistakel klau. We don't pay attention to ourselves at all when we're trying to think about where we're holding spiritually. Not only do we not pay attention to ourselves, we're so busy paying attention to everybody else and telling them what they're doing wrong and pointing out their flaws and pointing out how they should be better living their lives. Said the Brisker Rav, this is something to think about on a snowy day like today when we're all walking slowly and we're going home from shul and we're trying our best not to hurt ourselves in gashmias. He says it's a time to remind ourselves as well that when it comes to our spiritual sides of life, we should also do our best to make sure that we do everything possible to make sure that we don't slip, that we don't have those issues, and that we don't lose out spiritually from the experiences of our own lives.